I want you to imagine, just for a second, that you've managed to capture the absolute perfect photograph of a truly crucial moment in your life. Like everything about it is just flawless.
Oh, yeah. Like the focus is razor sharp.
Exactly. The lighting is exact, the framing is impeccable. You know, you've managed to capture reality in this clinical, absolute, totally perfect way.
Right, which is so rare.
Yeah. And I mean, human instinct, like what most of us would immediately do, dictates that you take that photo, frame it behind glass, and just protect it at all costs,
Oh,
right?
sure. It's very comforting to have that objective reality locked down. Like you've captured the truth of that literal second in time, and you want to freeze it forever so it can, never be altered.
Right. But, and this is where things get interesting. What if the path to finding the true meaning of that image, like the actual emotional weight of that moment, required you to deliberately destroy the photograph?
Yeah, that's a tough concept to wrap your head around.
It really is.
Yeah.
So today, we are going on a deep dive into exactly why a creator would choose to fracture their own perfect capture of reality just to tell a much deeper story.
And it is a fascinating story.
Truly. Our starting point for this exploration is a collection of personal reflections and technical notes behind a mixed media acrylic painting from 2018. It's called Citrero, which translates to Falconer, by the artist Jairo Duke.
Right.
And we're going to unpack the philosophical tension here between the cold, mechanical reality of a camera click and the emotional truth that that really only emerges when human hands intervene.
Yeah, and that intervention, I mean, it often requires completely erasing the original just to make room for something real.
Right.
And to understand how that actually works, we have to look at the physical space where this piece was born. So in 2018, Duke was working out of a studio in Whittier, California.
Okay, Whittier.
Yeah, and he was in this period of like intense artistic searching. He was really trying to define his own unique visual language. So that studio basically functioned as a laboratory for controlled errors.
Controlled errors. I like that.
It was a space to take a perfectly fine, initial photograph for Citrero and subject it to a technical process that is just inherently unstable.
Right. And that technique, for those who don't know, is called an image transfer.
Yeah.
And, you know, for anyone who isn't spending their weekends wandering around fine art galleries, image transfer might sound like, I don't know, running a piece of paper through a photocopier, or maybe tracing a projection onto a wall.
Right, like something very clean and mechanical. Like,
Exactly. But the actual mechanics of this process are highly, highly destructive.
oh yeah, physically, it is a violent process for the image. I mean, you start with a printed photograph, usually just on paper, and you apply a medium, in this case, an acrylic gel, and you put it generously over the entire surface of the image.
Okay.
Then you take that coated paper and you literally place it face down onto the blank canvas. And at this stage, you just have to walk away and let it dry completely.
So you're just gluing the photo to the canvas.
Essentially, yeah, it creates this very powerful chemical bond between the ink of the photograph and the actual fabric of the canvas underneath.
It effectively glues the image face down.
Yeah.
But the actual destruction hasn't happened yet, right?
No. The critical, totally destructive step comes next. Once it is completely cured, totally dry, you take water and apply intense manual friction to the back of the paper.
Wow.
Yeah, you are literally rubbing the paper away. You are disintegrating the paper pulp entirely with your bare hands or maybe a sponge, and you're trying to reveal only the ink that has adhered to the canvas underneath.
So wait, you're soaking this pristine, perfect photograph and aggressively scrubbing it until the paper just pills up and falls apart in your hands. I
Exactly.
mean, the physical friction required to do that is going to tear things up. It's got to be impossible to keep the original image 100% intact doing that.
Oh, it is impossible. It completely breaks down the paper fibers, but like you said, it inevitably tears away fragments of the ink too, because the chemical adhesion of that gel, it's never perfectly uniform across the weave of the canvas, So the end result preserves the basic structural skeleton of the photograph, but it is deeply, deeply worn.
Like it's been through a war.
Yeah. It has irregular textures. It has actual holes. I mean, there are entire zones where the visual information has just completely vanished.
You know what it reminds me of?
Yeah.
Have you ever found an old vintage family photograph in a shoebox?
Oh, yeah.
Like one of those old black and white ones that
Yeah.
somehow got stuck to another photo. And when you finally painstakingly peel them apart, like half of your grandfather's face or the background is just torn away.
That is the exact perfect analogy. And, you know, if you want to restore a photo in that kind of condition, you face a philosophical problem right away.
Because you don't know what was there.
Right. You can't rely on the objective image anymore. You have to rely on your own memories, your own feelings about that day to mentally paint in the missing pieces.
Wow.
You cease to be a passive observer of the image and you are forced to become a storyteller.
You have to fill in the blanks yourself. Which, honestly, that answers the immediate question I had, which was, why an artist would risk ruining a portrait of someone important? Why not just put a blank canvas on an easel, have the subject sit in front of you, and just paint them from scratch?
Well, in Duke's view, starting from a totally blank canvas means you are ignoring the exact objective reality that the camera lens already captured.
Right, because the camera is just data.
Yeah, the camera gives you the absolute undeniable truth of a split second. The image transfer preserves that skeleton of reality. But by intentionally destroying parts of it, by creating those voids and empty spaces, you create a demand for human intervention.
Oh, I see.
Those missing zones of visual data, they basically become the new blank canvas.
That is so interesting. You create a problem on purpose, so you were forced to solve it with your own hands.
Exactly.
And if I remember the notes correctly, to solve those missing areas in Cetrero, Duke used fast-drying plastic polymer Liquitex acrylics.
Yeah, and the choice of material there is actually vital. It's not just a random paint choice.
Really? Why is that?
Well, if you use oil paints, you have weeks to blend, rethink, and, you know, overanalyze your brush strokes. They stay wet forever.
Right. Oils take a long time to dry.
But acrylics dry in minutes. They force agility. They allow the artist to quickly rebuild the volume and apply what art critics call the pictorial gesture in those critical missing areas before the instinct just fades away.
Okay, wait. Let's define that for the listener. What does pictorial gesture actually mean in practice?
It basically means the physical sweeping motion of his own hand. It is the literal physical mark left by a human being where the machine's ink failed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This is the exact moment the alchemy happens. The artist evolves from being a literal reproducer of a photograph into an interpreter.
Right, because he's adding himself to it.
Exactly. He stops recording the cold data of a camera and starts imposing his own emotional vision.
That makes a lot of sense. And, I mean, you can see this evolution from reproducer to interpreter so clearly in how the final piece uses color.
Oh, absolutely. The color work is striking.
Yeah, because once you aren't bound by just strictly copying reality, color becomes a narrative tool, right?
Definitely.
Like looking at Cetrero, there is a very stark color contrast. The background is absolutely dominated by these cold blues, but in the foreground, specifically the bird of prey and the falconry glove, you have these very dark, warm, earthy ochre tones.
Yeah, and it is a highly calculated technical decision to push those specific tones against each other.
Well, wait, let me push back on that for a second. If the subject is standing outside, isn't the sky just naturally blue? I mean, is he really making a calculated choice, or is just painting reality the way it actually looks?
That's a fair point, but remember, the artist is an interpreter now, not a camera.
Okay, true.
He could have painted the background a neutral gray or detailed a dense green forest or even abstracted it into like warm sunset colors.
Right. He had total control over those missing areas.
Exactly. Emphasizing the cold blues triggers a mechanical effect in color theory called atmospheric perspective.
Atmospheric perspective. Meaning like the colors physically affect how we perceive depth.
Yes. The human eye literally perceives cold colors, like blue, as visually receding. They fade into the distance.
Oh, interesting.
So by using intense blues in the background, Duke creates this massive sense of infinite space, of openness, of wind. But the warm colors, the earthy ochres of the leather glove and the falcon, they do the exact opposite.
So they advance.
Exactly. Warm colors visually advance. They jump out of the canvas right at the viewer.
It is quite literally a physical push and pull on your eyeballs.
It really is.
There's actually a quote from Duke where he describes this by saying, "The blue envelops, but the falcon concentrates."
I love that quote.
Yeah. It's not just a decorative choice, you know. He is physically directing your eye where to look, forcing the background to retreat and the subject to just thrust forward.
And that deliberate direction of the viewer's eye leads us to what I think is one of the most rebellious choices in the entire painting.
Okay, how so?
Well, where he forces you to look completely breaks the fundamental traditional rules of a portrait.
Because you don't look at the face.
Right. Human psychology dictates that when we look at an image of a person, we immediately seek out the face. We look for the eyes to find emotion and identity. You know, we inherently want to know who we are looking at.
We're hardwired for it. But the focal point of Sotero-like, the place carrying all that visual weight and all those advancing warm colors we just talked about, is not the human face.
No, it's not.
It is the leather falconry glove and the wild bird of prey sitting on it. Subordinating the human face in a portrait shifts the entire hierarchy of the image.
It completely does. It creates a silent dialogue. By pushing the human face into the secondary visual space, the glove becomes the absolute frontier.
Frontier.
Yeah, it is the single physical point of contact where two entirely different worlds collide. Like on one side of the glove, you have human technique, control, and dominance. And on the other side, you have the pure, unadulterated, wild instinct of a predator.
Wow.
So subordinating the face tells you that the subject's true identity isn't actually found in their physical features. It is found in that intersection.
And, I mean, knowing who that subject actually is makes that intersection profoundly intimate.
It really does.
Because Jairo Duque is not the falconer in this painting. The subject in the portrait is actually his son, Daniel Esteban.
Yeah. A father painting his son in this specific role, it shifts the piece from just being a cool technical exercise to a deeply personal family document.
Absolutely.
But to really grasp the weight of that, you have to understand what falconry actually is. Mechanically and ethically, falconry is the complete opposite of keeping an exotic pet.
Right. It's not like having a parrot in a cage.
Not at all. It is an ancient interspecies alliance. You cannot domesticate a bird of prey using force or dominance. The entire relationship is built on absolute trust.
And the level of scientific dedication required to maintain that trust is just staggering. I mean, we're talking about daily weigh-ins down to the exact engram to keep the bird's hunting instincts sharp without letting them get weak or malnourished.
Yeah, the precision is intense.
It requires telemetry, specialized hygiene, and incredibly complex nutrition.
It is a relentless daily scientific commitment. But, you know, the absolute core of the practice, the moment of truth, happens when the falconer releases the jesses.
The jesses being those short leather straps that hold the bird to the glove, right?
Correct. When those are released, the bird flies 100% free. It is a wild predator in the open sky.
There's no leash anymore.
Exactly. So if that bird decides to return to the falconer's glove, it is not because it is submissive or afraid. It is making a calculated choice of survival based on a bond of mutual trust that took months, if not years, to build.
That is just incredible. And this wasn't just a sudden hobby for the son, right? Like, Duque and his son, Daniel Esteban, spent years having these deep childhood conversations about the duty humans have to protect eagles and falcons.
Yeah, this has been a lifelong bond for them.
So this painting honors a shared set of ethical values. It is about a son's dedication to animal rehabilitation and a father's immense pride in watching his son respect and protect nature.
Beautifully said. The painting establishes a balance where the human isn't dominating nature. He is in a silent, respectful alliance with it. Duque chose to document his son executing a labor that perfectly materializes the ethics they share.
You know, looking at how rigid the training is compared to the moment of releasing the bird. Wait, I just realized something.
What's that?
It perfectly mirrors the physical art process we started with. Like, falconry is the absolute perfect metaphor for Duque's entire artistic process in this painting.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the structure they share is undeniable.
Right. In both his art and in falconry, you start by applying this intense, rigid technical control. You meticulously apply the acrylic gel. You carefully lay the paper down, just like the daily weigh-ins, the telemetry, the intense scientific training of the bird.
Right, all that preparation.
But eventually, in both disciplines, you reach a point where you have to let go. You have to accept the unpredictable and let nature take its course.
Yeah. In the art studio, letting go means applying the water and friction and accepting that the paper will disintegrate in ways you can't entirely predict.
You have to accept the destruction of the paper, just like the falconer has to release the jesses and let the wild bird fly free.
That's such a great parallel.
Because you can't force the ink to stay perfectly on the canvas. You can't force the bird to come back to the glove. The art, just like the falcon, has to be released to interact with the world with the hope that the connection you built was strong enough.
It is all about knowing when to exert control and when to step back and let the wildness, whether that is the erosion of wet paper or the instinct of a predator, take over. But, you know, that wild unpredictability isn't always easy to live with long term.
What do you mean?
Well, looking back at those chaotic choices from 2018 today, Duke has a very specific way of viewing the flaws in the piece. He calls his current mature aesthetic perspective ternura critica, critical tenderness.
Critical tenderness. That's a beautiful phrase. What does that mean exactly?
It is the ability to look back at your past work with a highly mature, developed eye and clearly spot the technical flaws. Like with his mature perspective, he can look at Sotrero and see the hesitant brushstrokes.
He could see where he messed up.
Yeah, he can see where the visual hierarchy is maybe still a little clumsy, or where the blending between the raw photograph and the Liquitex acrylic paint doesn't flow quite as naturally as his work does today.
So he doesn't pretend the painting is technically flawless by his current standards.
Not at all.
But the tenderness part is that he doesn't reject the painting because of those flaws.
No, he embraces them. That raw, friction-filled experimentation in the Whittier studio back in 2018 was absolutely necessary.
It was a stepping stone.
Exactly. If he hadn't destroyed that paper, if he hadn't forced himself to fill those voids and evolve from a reproducer to an interpreter, he never would have developed the mature visual language he uses now.
Right.
The honest intention of the piece, like the deep desire to honor his son and those shared ethical values, completely outweighs any clunky brushstrokes.
The intention is the soul of the work, and the technique eventually catches up to the soul. And honestly, the universal takeaway here goes way beyond acrylic mediums and atmospheric perspective.
Oh, for sure.
Because in any career, in any relationship, in any personal journey, we all have our own versions of that 2018 painting. We all have those early projects where our tools just weren't sharp enough to match the beautiful vision we had in our heads.
Yeah, and it is so easy to look back at those early attempts and cringe or want to hide them away.
It is. But trying to force your life or your career to be that perfect, crisp, unalterable photograph we talked about at the very beginning, that is the fastest way to stagnate. It is precisely in the tears, the mistakes, and the voids of our failures where our humanity actually gets to intervene. That's where the growth happens. When the machine fails or the plan breaks down, that is when you are forced to pick up the brush and interpret your own reality.
Well said.
Thanks. So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final provocative thought to mull over today.
Okay, let's hear it.
If you had to take a blank canvas today to represent the most important moral value that you share with the most significant person in your life, what ancient trade or labor would perfectly symbolize that deep connection?
Oh, wow. That really makes you think about how our daily labors reflect our deepest ethics.
It does, doesn't it? Remember, sometimes you have to take that perfect clinical photograph of reality and be willing to tear it apart just to find the truth underneath. Thanks for diving deep with us today. Keep looking for those voids, and don't be afraid to paint in the missing pieces.